So now every day we do a different parshan from the parsha. So I'd like to talk about the Nitziv a little bit on Tuesdays. Daniel, come, you'll enjoy this. It's very interesting. The Nitziv is a very, very interesting figure. As you know, the Rosh Hashiva of Elazhin, Mike Zaidi, who is a big gadol in Shlaim, was his Talmud. So we heard a lot about the Nitziv. We studied a lot about the Nitziv. One of the more intriguing parts of the Nitziv is his role in Zionism. A lot of people call him the father of modern Zionism. Obviously, he dies in the early 90s, 1893 in Warsaw. Somebody visited his grave. Very, very active in the Kibbutz Zion Aliyah, that whole late 19th century Aliyah. There's actually an organization which was illegal in Volozhin called Nes Tziona, which was illegal from the Russian government. Nes Tziona was the name. He was involved in an 1889 conference. He wrote a lot of letters to the Yeshua. Very, very, very reinforcing, very positive. He Dafka was involved in a lot of conversations because Shemitah was very, very difficult those days. And the cook was, so to speak, more or less Mekel, that today Shemitah is Midrabanan, and therefore you can pull off that to Mechira. The whole Hat to Mechira is based on the premise that Shemitah is known as the Rabbanan. If it's Deraisa, you can't be Mekel. The Nitziv thought that Shemitah is Deraisa. So he was pressing for greater Shemitah observance, but not in a vigilante or fundamentalist or fanatic way, just understanding people really weren't eating. We're talking about, it wasn't that they couldn't get their apples and they couldn't get there. They simply weren't eating on Shemitah. It's a very, very interesting figure. There have been books written about the Nitziv and Tziyonis. I picked up two statements of the Nitziv in Parshas B'Chukosai that are extremely relevant for the modern state. One is a famous, famous phrase that appears in B'Chukosai for the first time, Kol Miyot. Hashem says that I will break the slave shackles of Mitzrayim, Bosh Bar Mokos Ulchem, V'Alecheschem, Komi Miyot. And I will bring you Komi Miyot. Komi Miyot is a, that's how, if you don't know, some people call the Independence War Milchemet Komi Miyot. So that's become a very iconic and resonant phrase in the modern Israeli parlance, Komi Miyot. There's a yeshuv in the south, the Haredi yeshuv called Komi Miyot. There's actually an organization called Kol Miyot that started about 10 years ago. I think to get Haredim involved in society. There's a train station planned. Kol Miyot is a very, very, if you look at the state of Israel, that first generation of artwork, that communist-looking art with all these people holding up flags and stuff, Kol Miyot features very, very often in the captions and the subtitles. We say it twice during davening. We say it once in the Brach of Avar Avra, Kol Miyot Le'atzeinu. Of course, we say it in benching, Kol Miyot Le'atzeinu. So we borrow it from Bichol Kosak. Now, what Kol Miyot means literally, before we get to the Nitziv, is upright, pride, Tigmar and Baba Basa. The Jews will be very tall, Bimot HaMashiach. Does that mean all of a sudden we're basketball players? But Hashem will restore lost Jewish identity, either from Gan Eden or from the Beis HaMikdash. A very nice Gemara in Baba Basa. Anyway, what the Nitziv adds is as follows. I didn't photocopy the whole part because I wasn't planning on speaking about this, but he passes back there. He says, he takes a holistic look at this pasuk. If you have slave shackles on your neck, and those slave shackles, of course, are a metaphor for galus, and Kol Miyot is the relief of now. There's a non sequitur. If Hashem breaks the slave shackles, it just simply removes something physical from our necks. What's the transition from slave shackles, motot olchem, to upright? It basically says that the metaphor holds that even when the shackles aren't on your neck is bent down. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to transition two aspects. One is to remove the actual shackles, and one is to remove that bent down feel. And the prototype, or the exemplar, of a bent down object, even without the shackles, is an ox. If you look at an ox that is typically accustomed to drawing a wagon, even when the shackles, or whatever mechanism you use to shackle the ox to the wagon, is removed, its head is always bent. Why? Because it knows that that's its job. It's been conditioned to carry. If you take a look at an ox in the wild, the head is only bent when it eats, and its head isn't, but it's not. Whereas the neck of an animal that draws wagons takes the shape that it maintains in its posture even when it's not drawing the wagon. He says something very, very interesting. Basically, to be a Jew is to be prepared to live in Galus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu programs it from the dawn of time. Avram is told, Yer Yezer Acha. And even when we receive temporary respite, and we receive a Yeshua, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeems us and saves us, or even when we return to Eretz Yisrael, you have that nagging sense that those shackles will one day be replaced on your neck. And nationally, your collective behavior reflects that. You don't walk around with that sense that we have our own place and our own future and we don't deserve this. And when it happens, We accept this. Part of a Jew's life is, of course, not being victimized, but knowing your place in history. And this is something, obviously, the Maharal talks about with the three oaths that the Jewish people took in the Shershir. At a certain point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers a message. No longer should you keep your head attitudinally bent towards God. At this point, Golus has ended, and I've broken the shackles. I haven't just removed you from Golus, but I've also eliminated that identity and that attitude of a lowered and bent head, and I've restored Golus. Let's just read it, because it just resonates so deeply with what we're going through, that we feel that something's different. This isn't just a salvation and a miracle and a rescue of millions. We feel as if there's a whole new attitude, that we don't deserve this, and we're at the end of history, and we're not prepared to go through this again across many different areas of Jewish experience. Take a look at Yud Gimel on the bottom of the column. Humashal kimo shar shir agil li sa'or ol shenotzer bo. And that's just accustomed to carrying that weight. Afilu b'shashe mesirim ha'ol me'alav. Even when you remove that shackle, yodeh sh'achrasha mukhan ha'shenis ha'masa. He knows that in a few minutes you'll re-harness him to the wagon. Ad shemeshabrim misal, until you break the shackle. Obviously, the ox can't process it, but at least symbolically, from your standpoint, hubatuach shelo yacharosh ol. Now the animal, if he has any intelligence, knows that he's no longer designated or destined for carrying. Vato barosh namuch mirov hergelo bekach. He starts with a lowered head, and then, of course, he walks kolim miyot. And if you look at the next paragraph, you can even read it. I mean, it's a little cut off. Kach Yisrael notzu legalot. The Jewish people, their whole identity through history. He quotes the Medrash and Shir Hashirim, Bat Galim, we're called the daughter of Galim, which has many different meanings, but the Medrash interprets it, line number 2, look at them in all that line, Barta de Galue, we are a daughter of Galus. To live in history means that you have to be prepared for your historical task to walk through this world and bear a message. If you look at the end, the next little paragraph, our natural national destiny until this stage has been to live in Galut, and here HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, not only will I remove the Galut, but I will remove the Galut mentality, as we would say, that this is no longer part of your national destiny. That's why this word is so resonant, and then it's if sensed it. I don't know when he wrote this piece, probably before he, the Chibat Zion movement, the Chavvet Zion movement started gathering momentum. One other piece, which is also very, very deeply felt in Zionism, especially religious Zionism, which stems from Hasidus, ironically, and in Ziv, one such as Hasid, is the whole ethic of being in Eretz Yisrael, is that we live alongside of quote-unquote sinners, people who aren't ritually loyal to our past, and we feel like we can partner with them. We feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us and even them, even though their ritual performance isn't as perfect and as ideal as we would hope. And Hashem, so to speak, recognizes their heroism on other fronts, and then, of course, favors them because we live together and we carry them just like they carry us. So the pasuk right before said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not be disgusted, will not be repelled by Lo Tig'al Nafshi Etchem. It's a very interesting word. Now, obviously, it's setting up the end of the parasha, because in the end of the parasha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is repulsed by our behavior, and the land vomits us out from Israel. So it's setting up the contrast between the beginning of the Chokosah and the conclusion. But in Tziv, it's a very interesting reason, actually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't be disgusted. If we don't sin, there's no reason for Hashem to be disgusted. Why is he even saying it? It's a very strange. If you show up at a table and say, I hope I won't vomit up this food, it'd be very rude. If you take something into your system and you feel your stomach churning, or the host says the cheese is a little bit stale and old, I hope I don't vomit. So there's something off. There's something off about the food. And you mention regurgitation. Why is Hashem mentioning regurgitation? So in the Tziv senses this, look at source, look at Yud Aleph. I didn't underline it. Even during the best of times, Yesh Beker of Yisrael and Hashem Pratim Shemaseh Metuavim, there may be sinners. The fact that the overwhelming national experience is favorable, so Hashem tolerates the sinners. And the metaphor is, let's say a father, not anyone's family here, but let's say a parent has a child who's a bad seed, and that child is constantly bothering and making trouble and ruining the family dynamic. So the father doesn't leave the house because he enjoys being with his wife and being with the other children, so he tolerates the child who causes inconstant. Of course, not that anyone here was that child. Tolerates that child. Literal, if someone has bad odor, but it doesn't mean bad body odor, it means bad family odor. He closes his nose, he bears it, literally. And he quotes Shlomo, as it happened in the days of Shlomo. The Kodesh Baruch Hu is saying, you will live together as a family rather than being scattered across the land. And therefore, once you have that family dynamic of living together as a family, and our jargon, living together in a nation, in Israel, as a mishpacha, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is able to tolerate, temporarily, hopefully, people whose behavior doesn't reflect his desire because of the family experience. So this is also a very deeply held ethic in Zionism and living in the state of Israel. And now that we don't just live in little cantons scattered in little homes across Europe, but we're living together as a family, so that sanitizes, or it doesn't validate, but it creates durability to certain lifestyles that otherwise would be glaringly deficient in religious behavior. So the two nitzivs very clearly juxtaposed that are very resonant about Zionism. He's not going to write about Zionism in his writings, and he's not going to talk about the ideology and the political system. These are two very deeply held ideas. And Hashem won't repel or won't be repulsed because of the sinners, because we live together as a family like a father. Okay? Shikoh. Sorry for yanking you guys out, but I thought when I saw you two, I thought you'd enjoy these two. Have a good day, Ari. Have a good day.